The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I am John Kissel, and with me tonight is Shane Settner.
Yo.
And J.R. Peters.
What up, what up, what up?
Usually when we're joined by J.R., it's some kind of year wrap-up, year recap, because J.R., I think he is maybe up to my level of obsessive watching, keeping track of what's getting released in the theaters. So he's always got a global opinion about how any given year is doing as far as movies are concerned or TV. And in that vein, JR is joining us tonight. Shane's a staple. We don't need to talk about him.
Basically, I'm the Toyota Camry of podcasters.
I would have given you, no, Accord is Honda. I don't know what I'm talking about as far as Japanese cars. The point is, we're talking about the best of 2018 so far. And that's why JR is with us. We're just going to jump right into it. As we said, myself, Shane, and John, we're just going to go down and name three things that we've seen so far this year that we've really enjoyed, that we think are going to hold up through the rest of the year. And I'm going to start with probably, it's hard to imagine that a movie is going to top this in the remainder of 2018, but You Were Never Really Here, a movie from Lynn Ramsey, who directed previous MNC pick We Need to Talk About Kevin. And she brings that fairly poisonous worldview, dark depths of humanity to one of Joaquin Phoenix's greatest performances, someone who consistently does fantastic work, and this is at the top of the pile. He is a former FBI agent, former soldier, who spends his time now hunting after, like, victims of sex trafficking, although there is a sense that he'll just do pretty much whatever you hire him to do. Bill Rawls from The Wire. Remember The Wire, guys? Remember when we were talking about The Wire?
Yeah.
It seems so long ago.
It's so bizarre that series was only 6 episodes long.
Crazy. They cut it off mid-season. A cruel, cruel, cruel move by HBO.
Destroy
a series in its prime. There were no more episodes for us to talk about. Pretty anticlimactic, but here and there. Bill Rawls from The Wire gives Joaquin Phoenix these marching orders, and eventually he finds himself in a case that kind of just balloons out of control. It's barely 90 minutes. It moves extremely fast while also taking its time to really get into the head of this deeply damaged individual. And Johnny Greenwood does the score. Lynn Ramsey has such a fine touch with the mood that she's trying to create of these antisocial individuals that so often crop up in her movies. And I just absolutely fucking loved it. Like, if there's a theme to the best movies I've seen so far this year, not necessarily going to be talking about all of them. This is not going to be a 2-hour long podcast. It's been a pretty great year for movies so far. It's despair and, like, figuring out a way to move forward despite that despair. This is squarely in that wheelhouse. It has an ending that will fucking knock you on your ass. It should be coming out on DVD and Blu-ray and streaming here shortly. You Were Never Really Here. When I write my review, it might be an A+, which would put it in my all-time top 50. So,
was this wide release or just...
It's been in Atlanta and gone. It was here for like 2 weeks, give or take.
I will say that I know you're kind of cynical about
sure
what's going on in this movie. I have obviously not seen it.
Mm.
But as a podcast, we will also podcast on anything as long as you pay us. Any subject's fine. Like Joaquin Phoenix in this movie, sure, you got a job for us, we'll podcast about it. So just throw it out there. If anyone wants to pay us to podcast, you can actually pay me and I'll give your opinion in my voice.
Shane's going through a rough time in his law practice these days. And he really needs everything he can get. Podcasting skills are right up there with the money you deserve, justice you need, that kind of stuff. Whatever it takes, Shane needs that income. So, you know, put it out there. What do you want to hear us talk about? It costs $10 per And I chopped a lot of those out too. Joaquin Phoenix's trademark weapon of choice in You Were Never Really Here is a ball peen hammer. Since we're comparing ourselves to a cleaner for hire, what would our, at the MMC's, weapon of choice be?
What is our weapon of choice?
Our signature accessory.
I mean, I imagine we just play Joe taking his hot takes out loud until people just give up and leave.
We CGI the effect of us reaching perhaps back in our waistband or whatever, and then we whip out, like, hanging on to Joe by his belt, and we're just, like, pointing him at people while he says something stupid.
Oh, how about, like, we've cloned a bunch of Joes? And like they're like miniature Joes, like a miniature Australian Shepherd type thing, you know, situation. Mm. And we pull them out, and all those Joes just start arguing with each other.
Just total chaos. Total chaos. The equivalent of a smoke bomb.
Yeah, just a bunch of Joes' hot takes.
This is great, Lynn Ramsey. We await your call for You Are Never Really Here to the Joe-ening. JR, one of the best things you've seen so far in 2018.
So Deadpool is literally Deadpool 2, sorry. Yeah. It's Deadpool, but they, you know.
But Deadpooler.
Yeah, that's really the only way to describe it, is like all the ridiculousness of Deadpool, they took it a little bit further. I mean, for one thing, the guy assembles a team. And
he sure does.
Have you seen this movie?
I have seen it.
I unfortunately have not. But go ahead. Spoilers are fine.
Yeah, spoiler alert. He assembles a team, and they jump out of a plane, and out of the, like, seven people that jump out of the plane, two of them live.
On their first mission. Respectable. A totally ballsy move.
They're jumping out. Everyone's like, hey, man, like, you know, it's really windy up here. We probably shouldn't be jumping. And Deadpool's like, listen, motherfuckers, you're just going to jump out.
We're going to X-Force.
Yeah.
We can do this. They don't cast him with, like, nobodies that you expect to die. They cast, like, Terry Crews is in there. You'd expect him to be, like, an integral part of the remainder of the movie.
Yeah, but, and he just dies 10 minutes after they introduce him. Like, it's so ridiculous. But also, because there was nowhere else to go with it, I don't think it was as good as Deadpool original one, but it's still one of the better movies I've seen. They did a good job of, like, you know, giving him something other to be other than just the loud mouth assassin asshole dude. You know, he's got some reason for doing the stuff he's trying to do, which is basically trying to prove something to his wife that he gets from the first one.
See, I didn't love that part of it. I thought they were really mean to that wife character after that first movie, where she was more integrated into the actual plot. Like, she's, we said spoilers, so she's dead very soon.
Yes.
And just, like, the nonsense of, like, the heaven area. And then with like, the end credit stuff, maybe she's still alive. Who fucking knows? Like, you can't try and generate some kind of pathos or some emotion in that movie of all movies. It has to be all of one thing. I think Deadpool 2 kind of blurs the lines a little bit. Like, the tone is not quite as consistent.
I think they did a good job for what they were trying to, you know, it could have been way worse with them trying to blur the line on, you know, he's an asshole, but he's still trying to do the right thing and, you know, all that stuff. You could have went... It could have
gone somewhere.
For what they were trying to do, I think they did it well. It was a rehashing almost. You know, all the jokes of him getting shot and, like, nothing, nothing happening to him, and, you know, he. I will say, him getting the bottom half of his body ripped.
Sure, cocking. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there. No question.
Tons of good stuff, but I just don't think it was as good as the first one. But they. The opening scene where he has the little action figure of Wolverine dying and he's like, fuck you, this is for you, Logan, for riding my coattails to a rated R rating. fuck you, and then blows up. Yeah, like, that got a good laugh out of me, you know. The Juggernaut, I think they could have done something better with him than just have him being... I don't think they used him well.
I mean, you see all the money on the screen, and it comes from the director of John Wick. I kind of expected better in the action. I thought it was very standard superhero action with a lot of, like, quick cuts and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. But, it was so...
If it's a comedy first, then I think it succeeds.
Yeah. It's a movie that I'd recommend to anybody that liked Deadpool 1. If you've got the kind of comedic sense to like Deadpool 1, then you're going to like Deadpool 2, and you're going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I would go sign with that.
Is there going to be an uprising in Domino cosplay outfits? Like,
I don't know who that first person is. Uprising?
Domino?
Who's the first person, though? Uprising.
That's a word.
He's saying there's going to be an increase.
Increase.
See, I heard that in as and. So, like, Uprising and Domino are going to hang out? Like, who the fuck is Uprising? I thought you hadn't seen this movie, Shane. All right, fair enough.
So, I've already seen one person in my Facebook feed cosplay as Domino. I'm just imagining.
What occasion?
I don't know. I feel like there's going to be, like, there'll be the answer to Harley Quinn.
I mean, cosplay. I don't remember anything about, like, the look of that character beyond the afro.
Like, the thing over her eye and shit?
No.
Painting? She had the scar over her eye.
Does she?
Yeah, what the heck?
I don't remember that at all.
I haven't seen the movie, and I know she looks very particular.
She has, right? Like, a huge, like, purple duck star around her eye.
Yeah.
Nothing.
So, basically, we are 4 months from Halloween, right?
Give or take.
So that means we are 4 months from some sorority in Alabama dressing up as Domino and definitely blackfacing that shit.
Yes, getting everything else together. I mean, I feel like even the afro is too far, but someone will paint themselves.
Yes.
It's going to be fucking Tammy or whatever her name is.
Well, Tammy's luck is going to run out. Because Domino's power is luck.
Right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Go back to my X-Men cards. You know what? My mom brought a box of my old shit from elementary to high school. And I found, like, my 1995 entire X-Men card collection.
Nice.
And she's definitely in there. It's the only reason I would know Domino's luck. Because that. After we get done, you want me to go get it? We'll look there.
I don't.
Just we'll line them up and count them out, man. Just some cards. Just a couple of dudes in the 30s looking at some comic book cards.
Mm. Can I have some of them?
No. Oh. Shit, no.
Well, then I definitely don't
actually
want to
know
see
what? I have two Slayer. That guy. Whoever that guy was.
Two Slayers?
Yeah, this guy's not Slayer.
I don't want Slayer.
No.
Well, how many morphs do you have? He was
ooh,
my.
They do have one morph in there. The death of Morph.
You guys, sorry I brought it up. Shane, what have you liked best from 2018 so far?
Well, but the only thing I've read or watched or
consumed... Hey, we'll do books.
I haven't read any. Hang on, slow down. I've not read any books.
We don't want to push away our jock audience in favor of the nerds.
And the only thing that I've read in 2018 are Twitter, a really awesome decision against a... lawyer that I cannot stand, where he got hit with $30,000 worth of fees.
Nice
fines.
Arbitration, shot and fraud.
That was great, and yeah, so that's been most of my media.
Okay,
but I did watch the Andre the Giant documentary on HBO. It was fantastic, and I listened to the podcast about it as well. So every time I mow the lawn, like seared in my head at certain points on the lawn, what I was thinking about, like it's great. It's like. I keep thinking about France, so you should be
sure.
Happy about
love
that.
France,
but this
France
is
will come up again later in the podcast. But
Bill Simmons produces this really well done about who Andre the Giant was, especially for a lot of us who got into wrestling because of Hulk Hogan and Randy Macho Man.
And a lot of us
just
I can
missed.
Guarantee that you're the only person on this podcast that had that experience.
Without a doubt.
Okay. I mean, people who were into wrestling in the 80s, like if you're
the
kid,
royal
like,
us, as in the participants in the podcast and the listeners as well.
You guys didn't watch wrestling?
I guess that our demographics do skew upper 30s, low 40s. So right in the sweet spot for Andre the Giant.
Yeah. So I just didn't renew he was a good guy.
Stone Cold Steve Austin was my time.
Okay. JR, any wrestling?
Even though I'm like 2 years younger than you, if that. I just wasn't plugged in to the WWF scene.
Andre the Giant, it's a very interesting story about this guy who's just a freak of nature and what he did, what he went through. Just, it goes towards how just complex everyone is behind just what the celebrity. And now like your public persona. And for a lot of people, he's a good guy, then he's a bad guy, and then he's just this wrestler. You see him in Princess Bride, and you're like, oh, he must have been a funny guy too. But just his whole life, and there are a lot of myths about him as well, which is what I think is so interesting. And so they kind of go through and break down some of those myths. You know, did he drink a horse trough worth of beer in one night? And I think the answer is unclear, actually.
Was he actually hardcore alcoholic?
He was actually a pretty hardcore alcoholic, but he was in constant pain. So I imagine.
When you say horse trough, are you pulling a funny reference out of your head, or like
that's a funny actually, reference? Yeah. Okay. But I'm sure it's that. Hopefully, let's start that rumor. Horse trough.
I believe
Andre,
that
hashtag
is possible that he could have done that.
They were talking about I think it was cognac that he or something. I don't know. I don't remember. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was an absurd amount. And there are people on the Princess Bride set who said, yeah, he'd just crush bottle after bottle whatever the hell he was drinking, and it was absurd. But the guy was he was huge.
Yeah, he's a large man.
He was a giant. That's what they called him. But there's a lot of France in there. I think you should watch it.
Who doesn't love France? Everybody has the picture of your standard sports biopic in their head. Why is Andre the Giant better than that?
What are your standard? What do you mean?
Rises and falls. He was underappreciated. He actually was far more influential than people think he was. That kind of thing.
There's really no fall for Andre the Giant other than at the end of his career. I mean, but he just just retired. He was retiring. There, I think it's just a little bit different. And he's not really underrated. I feel like everyone knows how important he was. I guess he was there at the right time, though. Like when wrestling became like a national thing, like everyone jumped on the WWF, and as opposed to like these small, like if you were in Indiana, you wrestled for the Indiana Wrestling Association or whatever.
Sure.
So
IWA.
He was just based. Yeah, I'm sure it's out there. And it's been a couple of months since I've watched this, but I just think he's just such an interesting guy in the whole arc of all of it. How does this dude from a rural France end up in America as one of the biggest stars?
I haven't seen this. My skepticism is based on like the kind of movies that like 30 for 30, or maybe it's just like the specific 30 for 30s that I've watched, like the Detroit Pistons of the 80s, the Buffalo Bills of the 90s, Christian Laettner, guys and or teams whose reputation doesn't match their contributions to the sport. And Andre the Giant seems like he would fit very neatly in that trend.
Well, he was like the
biggest. But maybe it's the anecdotes more than anything that like sell the specific documentary, just because he's such an individual, unique person.
Yeah, he was a superstar right when they became national. He was like the first superstar in between for Hulkamania. So, and it talks about him leading to that bridge, and actually whereas they were enemies, but they were really good friends and had worked together actually as teammates before Hulkamania caught fire. Like, you actually get a lot of good stuff out of Vince McMahon, which is he's normally pretty closed off about everything, and he's just such a ruthless businessman. I think it's interesting. I'm not a huge wrestling fan. I encourage you. You don't even have to be a wrestling fan or even a sports fan. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds worth checking out. Again, France.
Oui.
Yeah, that is a French word.
Story, there was a writer, I can't remember which writer it was, that lived in his town in France. Like, one of the myths is this guy used to give Andre the Giant a ride to work, to school every day because he felt bad for him or something. It's just like one of these bizarre myths. When it just turns out this guy was just he gave all the kids a ride to school. He put them in a pickup truck and drove them to school. So I can't remember which fucking writer it was. It's going to bother me. But it is a thing. It's like one of those myths they talk about.
It was Voltaire. Yeah, he didn't actually die in the 18th century. Yeah, he lived long enough to drive Andre the Giant to school. they're the fucking best. The
French, yeah, when you drink 200 centuries. Yeah, when you drink 200 cups of coffee a day, you know, supposedly, that'll keep you going for a while.
Back up top to the lineup. I haven't watched a lot of TV this year. I'm a little behind on a lot of series that have come out, The Americans, and I'm barely into Westworld at this point, so on and so forth. But my favorite TV show probably so far this year came out in early January on Netflix, The End of the Fucking World. It's pretty short as far as binge-watching standards are concerned. This teenager who is pretty sure he's a psychopath, he runs into a girl who, like, from a broken family. This girl who is not a psychopath, but rebellious. And they fall in together. They go on a road trip. They figure out what real psychopaths are, and while also finding out that her pursuit of her family is ill-fated. And it's very much of the genre of, like, teens disabusing themselves of the ideas that they have, what the world is going to be and who they are and how they fit into it, and being woken up into, like, they don't really have to be the people that they think they're going to be when they're 16, 17, 18, however old these kids are. There's a lot of voiceover in it. There's a lot of dark comedy, and it's right in my wheelhouse as far as those things are concerned. I absolutely loved it. I could not. Usually, something that gets released in like early January is, certainly as far as movies are concerned, like, this is going to be garbage. But it's totally possible that the whole year might go by and nothing tops The End of the Fucking World.
This does seem like it'd be in your wheelhouse. Coming of age is like you and Blair are both like
boom. Yeah, I like coming of age stuff. I think a lot of times, really good coming of age stories have an outlet for their characters to talk about what they're really thinking while presenting the image of themselves to the world. And the way that The End of the Fucking World gets around this is that you hear the internal monologue of these characters as they're doing something antithetical to how they're acting. Like, I'm doing this thing, but I'm thinking that I shouldn't be doing it, or I can't say this to this person even as it is screaming in my head. And I don't know who is in charge of this series, but they get that exactly right. Just the voice in your head that desperately, desperately wants to say something, but you just can't do it.
So I remember this coming out, but I don't remember a lot of accolades for it, so I didn't end up watching it. So
it's just very small.
So I kind of like coming of age movies as well. Sure. What would this be, analogous to? Maybe, like, if you like this coming of age movie, this one, you know, is a good fit for, this would be a good one to watch as well.
Probably American Pie 3.
I mean, they're all adults by then. I think that's American Wedding is what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No one's getting married in The End of the Fucking, like, World.
Whereas Stifler ate shit, the character in The End of the Fucking World wants to murder everybody. It's a metaphor.
We mentioned, I'm not even going to entertain. We mentioned we need to talk about Kevin earlier. It's something like that from Kevin's point of view. If Kevin was turned down by like 20%.
If he wasn't actually going out and just wreaking actual havoc.
I mean, I don't want to spoil the series as it goes, but within the first 5 minutes, you understand that the male protagonist has killed animals, has engaged in self-harm, is very much potentially on his way to being like your garden variety psychopath, could very well find himself in that box. And the arc of the series is, for him at least, is can he break out of it? Does he want to be there? Is this just a part of him? Or is this extenuating circumstances? Just a period of his life where he just has dead emotions. And all this is happening in a series that does have a lot of jokes in it. It's not just relentless blackness like so much of what we talk about Kevin is, if that's the comparison.
Yeah, okay. I'll have to check this out.
Blackness is also the name of a rap group here in Atlanta.
So, is it actually, or are you just being racist?
Yeah, I'm being racist.
So. Yeah, okay. I wasn't going to be surprised if it actually was the name of
it. It should be. That's a fucking great name.
Yeah,
that's actually a really good name.
They're hanging out at Pink Trap House with, what's his name?
2 Chainz.
Yeah, I used to drive by the house.
Pretty Girls Like Trap, too.
It was so bizarre. It was on a busy street, and like it would clog everything up, and everyone got so fucking mad about traffic. It was great.
Dude, the best. So something good actually came out of that house is they used it to do like HIV testing and STD testing and stuff.
Yeah, it was so great. Because there's so many like half like liberals here in the city who are like, yeah, I love Hillary Clinton, and then 2 Chainz does that, and they're like, fuck you, you made traffic bad, you jerk, and he's like, we're also doing this, like, yeah, but traffic, you jerk.
As long as we're talking about this, not recently, like on election day for the Democratic primary here in Atlanta, I made a drive from the neighborhood where I live, which was volunteered as one of the neighbors as the hood. I would not call it that because I house hunted in the hood and decided not to buy. So I disagree with my neighbor's characterization of this neighborhood, but here and there, he thought it was the hood. Drove from there to an area that could not be further away from the hood, where you're driving by million-dollar home after million-dollar home. And here in Georgia, in the Democratic primary, we had a governor's race between a white woman and a black woman.
Right.
You could see the racial demographics of the neighborhoods that I was driving through change based on the signs in the yards.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Were you embarrassed?
In the white neighborhood.
Yes. Yeah.
Were you embarrassed to have the only white woman sign in your street? Is it in your herb garden?
My herb garden didn't exist at that point. And I would be afraid of teenagers tearing it up no matter what neighborhood I lived in, because I just feel like something teenagers would do. It is right on the road. I am concerned about it, but we're not going to racialize that fear. It's summer. Teenagers have nothing to do but pull basil plants out of the ground. It's a concern. I refuse to feel bad about it.
Was your sign decorated with raisins?
I have always been pro Stacey Abrams. I've never been a Stacey Evans. I just want to put that out there. Stacey Abrams is an intelligent individual who knows exactly what she wants to do as governor, and I fully endorse her.
Dude, you don't have to say this just because I'm on the podcast.
I would say it no matter what. Our Atlanta following JR is monumental.
Yeah. One guy in Brookhaven. One white guy. Hey,
JR,
Dave, how you doing?
JR, another best of 2018. What do you got?
So my second best of 2018 is A Quiet Place. So
I very much wanted to see this movie in theaters and just did not get to it.
I just saw it in the last 48 hours. So sometime in the last 48 hours. So it was worth it. It is they build it as a scary movie. I wouldn't say it's a scary movie. It's existential dread more. Like, the entire time you're just, like, in fear of what's going to happen next. You're not scared of what's going to happen next. You're just, like, on the edge, like, something's going to happen. You know something's going to happen. You don't know when, but you're not like going to shit your pants or like not be able to sleep that night. You just
the basic premise is scary, and taking part in that premise generates fear. I deeply respect that. I mean, this is interesting that you bring this up.
I mean,
like Hereditary is going through this exact same thing, where it's billed as a scary movie, and then audiences rebel against it. Like, this isn't scary at all. I don't understand this.
Well, I don't. People didn't rebel against The Quiet Place.
Yeah, and see, yes, that's the thing. Like, this is one of the rare horror movies, which seems to be where like the greatest difference between critics and audiences exists. Like a horror movie that critics love, generally audiences are going to hate, which is the case with Hereditary, which was the case with The Witch. There are other examples, I'm sure. But like, yeah, The Quiet Place manages to thread that needle and that it was loved by everybody.
They did it well. So, you know the whole premise. There's some things trying to kill them and they can only find them by sound. And so I just actually installed a little sound system at my place, and I imagine if I were to watch it, you wouldn't hear any sound at all for like 70 to 80% of the movie. It's just people walking around trying to, you know, be humans, do human things, you know, eat, hang out with each other, be a loving family. But they can't make any sound at all. And you know somebody's going to make sound watching the movie. That's what the movie, you know. But you just don't know when it's going to happen, what's going to happen because of it. And so everything they do is, like, painstaking for you. You know, somebody's walking down the stairs and they're taking super slow steps. But you might know that one of the steps is creaky, or you might know that one of the steps is broken, or, you know. And you're just like, holy shit. Like, if they, when they step on this, what is going to happen? Is the, you know, are the people going to, you know, the bad creatures going to come flying out of the woods or whatever? I mean, it's, you're on the edge of your seat. Like, what is happening? How's it going to happen? It's pretty good.
Is that kind of suspense foreshadowed, or is it just come out of nowhere, would you say? Like, as far as the stairs are concerned, like, maybe someone steps on, or maybe someone is just walking casually down the stairs at one point and there's a creak and no one notices because the danger isn't there. And then the viewer knows, okay, the next time this person goes down the stairs, there's a creak involved.
When the stairs are higher. There's foreshadowing. There's foreshadowing. Okay. So they do. Gotcha. Yeah, you know, it's not you just like thinking, oh, this and this and this. But you're also doing that because you know what it's like in a house.
Okay.
So
the experience of watching this movie sounds like a trial.
Yeah. I mean, so you get the foreshadowing of the other things, but then you're also thinking like, oh, okay, they're, you know, these people are about to do this thing. It makes noise when I do that thing, you know, like what, why would they be trying to do, you know, why would they be downstairs doing this or upstairs doing this? So I know that's got to make noise. Lots of fucking.
Cool.
But
lots of quiet fucking, also, just like Shane loves.
So I found out that John Krasinski and Emily Blunt are married because I looked it up. I was like, I couldn't remember her name, and so I looked it up, and then it was like spouse John Krasinski, and they're married in the movie. They're husband and wife, and they've got a couple kids. And I mean, I think they do a good job. The acting's well done. John, I think, directed and produced it and co-wrote it. So it's his movie, basically, you know.
We're all surprised that he's actually talented, right?
Yes. Yeah, very, very surprised.
Like, his previous directing is like pretty bog standard indie movies that didn't get a lot of love, despite like the cast that he was able to assemble. I think specifically of this movie from 2017 called The Hollers. It's got like Margot Martindale and Charlie Day and a lot of like TV people, like deeply respected TV people, but TV people nonetheless. in like a my mom is sick, I'm going to go back to my hometown and make everything better kind of movie. Yeah, and yeah, for him to make a universally
critically acclaimed,
universally acclaimed horror movie is surprising.
Let's talk about people who are hard to like. Nixon. Slow Burn podcast. I believe it's Gimlet Media.
Can I say Slate?
It's Slate. Slate. Sorry, yeah. How did I get the Gimlet? I don't know. There's some weird circular.
Gimlet thing. Is Science Versus.
Gimlet is Science Versus, but
I don't know like if that's where you
tapes.
All these was building anyway, podcast empires.
They are, and now they got like they're like rappers with their own record labels now. I guess I don't know because there's crime. Is Crime Town has its own label? I don't know. Anyway, Slow Burn is about Richard Nixon. It actually started in 2017, but majority of it was released in 2018. So I am putting that shit in this because if not, I have nothing else to contribute to this conversation.
It's fine. It's fine.
Super interesting. Most people don't know shit about Nixon, I feel like, and
I do not.
Like the most we know is from Futurama, which is fairly accurate.
Yeah.
especially coming out now, and I don't think it's unintentional it comes out now with so many comparisons to Trump.
A noted devotee of Nixon. They shared a lawyer. Roger Stone worked for both of them.
Right.
Trump wants to be Nixon, no question.
See, I don't know if Trump even gives a shit, but I think the people who surround Trump are so into this, and they're so into this Nixon playbook and his other playbooks.
Yes.
And you're listening to Slow Burn, and you're sadly like, holy shit, that's literally what just happened, or that's what Trump said, or that's what Trump's Secretary of State said.
Nattering nabobs of negativity, has that come up at all?
I don't think so. Okay, the exact term that I remember.
The vice president said that, Spiro Agnew. Headless body of Spiro Agnew as far as Futurama is concerned. Yeah.
And he's mentioned too, and what happened to him, which is a separate scandal of his own, because that's right, everyone always forgets, like, okay, Nixon resigned, and then why wasn't Agnew?
Because he doesn't have a head and all the people just growl at people. Right. It's not conducive to the head of the
government. Why was it Gerald Ford? And you forget that, Agnew has his own thing. So it's definitely worth your time. It's definitely, especially, it's like a good mix of political podcast with like the true crime podcast, right? Which can be a little.
All the rage.
Yeah. Like Atlanta Monster came out this year too, and it was fine. It was something I didn't know a lot about, and no one knows a lot about, but it's a little too like back page newsy for me on some of it, and like you're slumming it a little bit. So this is a nice combination of both that can keeps it of a high quality.
All right, Slow Burn. I do listen to a lot of Slate podcasts. I just haven't gotten to that one yet.
And RFK tapes just. We started recently too, so
I'm consistently like 6 months behind on Slate podcast. I think I'm in like early December, I think. Just listened to John Dickerson on the Slate Political Gadfest talk about the tax bill, so that's how far behind I am. Feels like a goddamn decade ago.
Dude, I used to do in order all the time, and I realized it was causing me anxiety.
I do enjoy having hindsight while I'm listening to old podcasts. Yeah. That's fun.
I've started deleting podcasts too. Like a lot of SGU got deleted. I just can't.
That's tough.
Adam Carolla deleted.
I understand.
What's SGU?
Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
Okay. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
So my last thing for this episode, my last movie, is a movie that played at the Atlanta Film Festival. It's not in theaters just yet. I want to say the end of July. It is the comedian Bo Burnham's debut movie, Eighth Grade. He was at the showing. He gave an interview, and it was nice and self-deprecating, as you would expect from Bo Burnham. He's a smart comic. And he talked about all the research he did into 13 and 14-year-olds, just trolling on Instagram and Snapchat, looking at what 13 and 14-year-olds were up to. He acknowledged that that was as creepy as it sounds, but the end result is what feels like a very true and lived-in depiction of what it's like to be a 14-year-old girl who is on the outside of her social circle, who knows how she's supposed to act, how other people are acting through the lens of social media, and finding herself wholly incapable of shaping her personality to that standard. It generated a lot of laughs in the theater that I was at, but I was shrinking into my seat for how painful every one of her interactions with her peers was. That was a tough movie to watch, but it, again, just feels so true and well-researched. There aren't, like, name actors in it. I recognized one guy, and I don't know what his name is. It's just all in the writing, all in the performances of the teen girl protagonist.
This is interesting.
It has laughs in it, but if you watch it like I do with just, oh my god, just supreme horror at the world that this poor girl is having to live in, it's a really great movie, and everybody should go see it. To paraphrase Bo Burnham, like, we just let this shit loose on a generation with rapidly forming brains and said, you'll figure it out. And he's in his, like, mid-20s, and he strikes me as someone who is deeply concerned and interested as far as what the future is going to look like for people that are growing up with, like, constant eyes on them all the time.
Well, he was, like, the first, like, famous teen.
Yeah, like, he broke out in his teens, didn't he?
I think it's interesting that he's writing about this. Yeah, he did. Like,
he's close to it. In high school. He's close to it. If you watch the trailer, like, there's a scene where a high schooler is amazed at how young the eighth grade protagonist was when Snapchat showed up, and, like, Bo Burnham was 8 or something when Facebook first started. So, I mean, like, he has that kind of experience as well.
Holy
of
shit.
Just, like, just so much stuff changing.
How have I never heard of this dude?
You never heard of Bo Burnham? That is surprising.
No.
He's
2 years older than me, and on Comedy Central. Like, I should know about this guy, and I've never heard of him.
His comedy, even when he was a teen, I mean, he was doing these things. He was kind of like one of those first ones that kind of be a YouTube star.
Yeah,
in a way, but it was it was fairly smart for his age, and I don't know if a lot of people within your demographic would have appreciated it. At the age
I think because
would appreciate that time.
I think his comedy is so accusatory that it makes him not popular in the sense of, I think there are a lot of easy jokes to, like, if you watch the last season of Pete Holmes' show, like, he goes to a college convention and kills there by doing a lot of easy jokes and lazy references, and Bo Burnham is very much not that. Like, he is, like, the comedian as, like, philosopher king since Louis C.K. was revealed as a piece of shit. Like, that archetype has fallen out of favor, but, like, Bo Burnham is very much in that realm as someone who strikes the audience as a wise individual.
Yes, and without being self-serious.
Yes.
He
has a sense of what he's talking about, even as he is trying to convince the audience that he has no idea what he's talking about. And that's in the movie. That all that is in the movie. It's like it's a very perceptive movie. I think Blair would love it. I think one day we'll have a Tully and an eighth grade doubleheader, and me and her will put out a 2-hour podcast just talking about these movies.
You ladies just drinking your chocolate.
You know,
martinis.
Dismissive. You don't need to be dismissive like that. Don't be dismissive.
Yeah.
I'll make you a chocolate martinis. It's fine.
I'm sure they're delicious.
I tell you what, I do recognize this Bo Burnham guy from one thing.
The Big Sick?
Nope. I didn't realize he was in that until you just said it.
He's one of the males buddies.
He's in one sketch from Key and Peele. It's, which is ridiculous, but it's a a cappella group sketch, and it's two black guys fighting over this group of white people, white guys.
That sounds familiar, and Bo Burnham would slot in very nicely in a generic white person comedy sketch.
He was, like, his the rise of fame. It was right around when College Humor was actually people in college age doing that, and as opposed to whatever the hell it is now.
Yeah. Well, he's a fucking auteur. He's gonna make great movies for the rest of his life, I would imagine.
I'm looking forward to
it. Just like eighth grade. JR, what's your last thing? What's your one last thing?
Look, I didn't get to wax poetic about Black Panther. But let me just say this, okay? God. Nothing like the fucking man coming down on a black dude for talking about black stuff.
Don't worry, JR. He lives in the quote-unquote hood. The hood. So he knows, man.
I just want to say the movie I would have talked about was Black Panther, but I think I slept through the Black Panther.
I believe you when you say that.
I could have gave. So my thing is Isle of Dog, because that's really the only other thing I've seen in 2018.
A slow year for you so far, it sounds like.
I have been deep in The Simpsons and Naruto.
Okay. Two things that share a lot in common.
I watched like 800 episodes of Naruto and a hella ton of episodes of The Simpsons over the last 5 months or 6 months or whatever. So I've been in the movies.
Fair.
But
Isle of Dogs from Wes Anderson.
I wasn't the biggest fan, but also it was a Wes Anderson movie. So like, if you like Wes Anderson, you would like this movie. It's got the typical like weird world building that he does with the nobody in the world is like a normal person type of thing. Yeah, this movie takes place in Japan. And so the dogs are the only people that speak English. And half the time, the Japanese people don't get subtitles.
I don't think they ever get subtitles.
They do get subtitles when they're speaking into like the when they're doing like the big announcements or yes, whatever.
When there's an interpreter translating Japanese into English for them.
I thought they got subtitles a couple other times too, though. Even when there wasn't a anyway, it doesn't matter because like, I mean, there's literal scenes where like this dude's speaking Japanese for like a minute and a half, and then the dogs just look at each other and they're like, okay, well, anybody know what he said? Nope. Okay, well, this is what we're going to do. And they just, like that whole, like, minute and a half was just a waste. And other than to just for Wes Anderson to be like, hey, here's some weird shit I can do, you know? Like
this was the criticism that Isle of Dogs ran into. As like, for Wes Anderson, weird shit is people talking in Japanese. And he has to give, like, a character... like an exchange student who is the one that rallies the Japanese to go save the dogs or help the dogs out. He ran into some trouble with the cultural stuff.
It was like, hey, let's have this white girl be the one that...
Yeah, like, it totally makes sense for the dogs to just speak in English because dogs shouldn't be able to understand humans in the first place. That's all right, fine. Right. But he fudges with the girl.
Yeah, he randomly inserts this foreign exchange student, and she's not white. She's white.
Yeah, she's too for a white.
Like, yeah, she's like so white that she thinks she's like gone past like hating black people white to like oh, this is gonna be ridiculous. But here's the white scale, as far as I'm concerned.
Sure. It loops around after a certain
You're like white, and then you like hate black people, and then you're so white that you feel bad about everything all white people have ever done, so then you overcompensate like so much. And that's where she was at. She's like the one that like gets up in front of everyone and is like yelling at people and like convincing them like, this is why you guys suck. It's like, holy shit, like this they've got the one white person in the movie yelling at a whole country.
Yeah, like Wes Anderson's never seen the movie before, and like, maybe you can do better than that.
Was it actual Japanese people speaking Japanese, or everyone just speaking Japanese?
Okay. Yeah, actual Japanese people speaking Japanese, but then he has, who's voicing the white girl? I have no idea.
Oh, no.
Yeah, there you go.
You didn't want to tell me that, did you?
It was withholding. Someone knew it was
fast. Yeah, come on.
Here and there. The dog stuff is fun. It's just the human stuff. Like, it's simple boy trying to find his dog, more or less.
It's
easy quest adventure movie, but just layered on top of it is this weird cultural shit.
But the whole boy trying to find his dog thing was, like, very, very tedious to me. I don't know why. Maybe it was because the boy was speaking Japanese and they were just, it was like they were ignoring him the whole time because they don't speak Japanese as well. It was weird. I don't know.
It was nice. So I Love Dogs, not the kindest to Japan. World Cup, pretty generous to Japan.
Let me say one thing.
Go ahead.
You're just going to edit it around. If we could have waited like 2 weeks to do this, I probably would have been able to give something better because GLOW Season 2 comes out on Thursday. Everybody watch that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. GLOW last year was one of my favorite TV shows of last year. So.
I think it was my number 5 or my number 6. Consult the website at mediacommovie.club for those rankings.
I don't remember you saying anything about GLOW.
Okay, Shane, jump in.
Say something about GLOW? I don't know about it.
World Cup.
Oh. That's going to get cut? Out of nowhere with no segue.
No, I segued. It's going to get edited.
Oh, you're going to cut out everything JR just said?
Regrettably.
Of course he is. Of course he is.
Here,
think
I'll
about
do a segue for you.
Well, the segue exists. It was a great segue.
It was a good segue, but speaking of things that aren't going to be around much longer, Japan's in the World Cup, and... No, the World Cup won't be much longer either, I suppose. Cause
A week?
2 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking about the World Cup. We kind of talked about
it. It's great TV.
Last pod. It is great TV. It's fantastic.
Can't tell if Kissel's joking or not.
I'm not joking.
No, he's in.
I signed up for Hulu's cable service specifically for the World Cup.
He's too messing right now. Just bring this up.
Solid.
Hulu with live TV is pretty nice, actually.
I think it's a
blessing in this household.
Yeah, I'm using it, so.
Just as a substitute for cable, it's a hell of a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
And no one has to come to your house. I don't understand why. It's all dependent on your bandwidth, sure, and all that. So I'm not getting high quality HD 4K or whatever, but come on. Is that so important?
Well, I mean, we have a giga in this household, so... It's really nice. World Cup's been awesome. If you didn't watch that Argentina game today, and I know you're saying... You were talking earlier, John and I were talking earlier about kind of sucks that these games are being played at the same time for the third game, but they have to be because who knows? Yeah.
They're going
to
start...
Because you're on the field, and Argentina is up by a goal at the end there, and do they know that they need that they're good to go? Do they think they need another goal to make up the goal differential? I love watching that drama. It was fantastic. The
just
goal just struck home.
Out in your head.
I consulted the standings 40 times probably.
Yeah, if Iceland had won, they needed to win by 2 at least to make a difference. Winning by 1 wouldn't help them.
It's fantastic. And who doesn't everyone's rooting for a country or their own country, and you can find out a lot about people who they're rooting for. It's great. And everyone who's rooting for Russia is just
Fuck is rooting for Russia?
And obviously it's so
refuse to believe that there is a single individual outside of Russia that's rooting for
There's
Russia.
There's not. And they were set up with the easiest group.
Reeks of corruption.
It's disgusting.
Totally exposed by Uruguay as a complete fraud of a team.
So, it's great. Countries versus countries. It's fantastic.
They're so into it. Everyone is so excited. That Argentina game, after that late goal, it cut to the fucking geniuses that were scanning the audience. Found a kid... Whose face contorted into a shape he could not reconstruct. It looked like the Scream mask. And it also found a kid who was so excited he started crying, and his dad had to comfort him.
Yeah.
That's just fantastic. Raw. It also, raw human drama.
It also found a balding man who is crying as well, and you're like, your family's a bunch of Nazi sympathizers back stage. In the day, right?
This is the group stage.
Yeah.
The state. I mean, you gotta. Yeah, fine, whatever. Do good to go on. You're far away from the end of this, and this is how excited you are.
Yeah.
And next week there's going to be fucking penalty kicks, and shootouts, and that kind of shit. It's perfect.
We're gonna be
by far my.
There's
favorite
a very good chance in 2026 that Atlanta gets some games. I'm very excited about the possibility.
No, that'll be fun.
I will go to any and all.
That'll be dope.
You're allowed.
It's a certainty.
You're invited to my house, JR.
It is an
yeah.
Absolute
I was gonna crash no matter what. I'd just show up. You'd be like, "What the hell?"
Yeah.
Like yeah.
Please,
it's
please just show up.
World Cup time.
Go, what the hell?
It's an absolute certainty there's going to be games in Atlanta. It's just like, is there going to be a semifinals game?
Yeah.
Who are you guys looking for?
The question.
These opening games are great.
It's going to happen.
I'd almost rather have...
And there'll be more teams then, too.
I'd almost rather have like these like okay teams that could make it, but not like the Socceroos. Give me all the Australians.
Yeah, I would have enjoyed the Australians to do better than they do.
Yeah.
Iceland, come on.
Oh, they have no shot, but they're here. They're having fun.
I mean, they fucking tied Argentina. Yeah. And it was down to the last game for them. They could have pulled it out.
Yeah. Give me
Who are you guys rooting for?
I would like Colombia to win. I'd like Colombia to get as far as they can, but come on. It's France.
Yeah.
France is They're going all the way. They're going to win.
I am rooting for Argentina because my loyalty to Hernan Crespo.
No shot. I'm glad that they made it through.
You should.
Just like there's a period of...
There's no one rooting for
There's
Argentina
a period of soccer excitement that just exists in this period where you're like trying to spoon up all this knowledge that you possibly can. And you look at like the personal lives of a lot of these players and it's kind of crappy as you would expect from super rich athletes. But, like, Messi, total anodyne, standard life. He's been with the same woman for a very long time. They have 3 sons. They're married. Everything's fine. It's nice.
But wasn't everyone rooting for Nigeria today?
Some team from Africa has to get through, I think, every year. And if it's not going to be Nigeria, it's probably going to be Senegal. But that might mean Colombia not making it through. And who doesn't love James Rodriguez?
Sure.
He's just a lot of fun. Colombians.
You already know I automatically root for any African team.
This should be. That should be everyone's a default.
I mean, Egypt got humiliated. Tunisia got humiliated. It's not going to happen.
It's all what's his name's fault from the Champions League where he jacked up
Egypt. You're talking about the Champions League.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying. I'm saying.
The World Cup is the beginning and the end of my interest.
No, what I'm saying is in the Champions League final, which was like 2 weeks before the World Cup started, the Egypt's best player got hurt.
Yeah.
He straight up got tackled.
That does suck, if only for the joy it would have brought me for Russia to not have made it out of the first round.
What's his name? Mo Salah? Yeah.
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 This is like, you don't have to give a shit about soccer and then you enjoy World Cup. It's like the Olympics, but it's just somehow better.
Streamlined. It all makes sense.
It looks
People
great.
Are more excited.
It looks
no
great
one's,
on television.
No kid.
Yeah,
it's
not
caught by the audience cam having to be comforted by his dad because someone fucked up in the biathlon.
Yeah.
And in the tradition of the Olympics, like I kind of maybe it's just the fucking mood I'm in lately, but like you just notice that players are like internalizing a lot of the country against country politics.
They
like
care.
The Swiss team playing the Serbian team, and the two Swiss stars are from Kosovo originally, and they score their goals and they like do a Kosovar hand gesture like right in the Serbians' faces. Who like genocided their people?
Yes,
that's fun. And
the Swiss trying as hard as they can to tie every fucking game. Such fucking commitment.
I mean, good for the Swiss. I mean, they're neutral.
Yeah,
they'd like a nice even result. France. I mean, if it was a contest for who has the best anthem, France would win in a runaway.
I love the World Cup. I haven't been watching it as much as I should be.
Yeah, and let's not pretend that I'm watching every game. What I'm doing is I'm recording every game, pretending to watch them, and then fast-forwarding through them to get to the goals. So,
yeah,
I'm no soccer saint. So that'll do us for this episode of the Medica Movie Club podcast. Check us out on the internet at medicamovie.club. Like us on Facebook at Medica Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter at Medica Movie Club. We will have a review of The Incredibles 2 coming up shortly. Shortly after that, we'll have Brigsby Bear and Beatrice at Dinner for our latest trio. Brigsby Bear, you'll have to check out our Redbox, while Beatrice at Dinner is streaming on either Netflix or Amazon, one or the other. Thank you for joining me tonight, Shane.
Thanks, John.
And JR.
No problem. No problem.